And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Gerd Vusterman, who is the director of the Acadiana Center for the Arts, and Joey DeFrancesco, who will be performing at the ACA this evening as a part of the jazz series, Gerd. And we're very glad to have you in our studios. We're sorry that time and the fundraiser conspired and we couldn't have you playing our Hammond in our studio.
That would have been a lot of fun.
It would have been a lot of fun. You are a master of the Hammond B3. And ours is something called a CV.
Yes.
It's, I guess, made for churches.
Yeah, the cabinet design is, yes, exactly. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting, and we've had a few people play it. Well, Joey, you'll be performing tonight. Are you solo, or you have a group with you this evening?
I have my trio with me this evening, Jeff Parker on guitar and George Flutis on drums.
Well, tell us a bit about your musical interests, where they started, how you got involved with a Hammond.
Sure. Well, my father plays, so I grew up with the instrument in the house. And at a very young age, I was just very attracted to it, the sound of it. I was hearing it on records. And when I was around 4 years old is when I really realized I want to play it. And I started playing then. I haven't been off it since.
So it was kind of like your first lullaby, I guess,
yeah.
Hearing a Hammond in there.
That
Definitely. Would be, yeah, really comforting, I would think, that round sound.
Mm-hmm.
So did your father play professionally? He was in groups?
He played professionally in I'm from Philadelphia, so the tri-state area, so Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Delaware. He played steady gigs all the time, yes. Mm-hmm. So professional, maybe not touring and things like that, but definitely a professional musician, and there were such great musicians in the area. So.
Yes, I know. We hear about them from here. We have great music, too, but it's legendary, the music that came out of that area. So was the organ a common instrument in groups that were played at that time in the area?
For sure. Mm-hmm. And Philadelphia was really where that whole genre started, because Jimmy Smith, who was the main guy that influenced, the major influence of that style, was from a town called Norristown, PA, which is essentially a suburb of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people went that way. So every group, at one point, every group had a Hammond organ in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those of our listeners who they've heard that phrase, Hammond B3, could you tell us exactly what it is? What makes the instrument so special?
I'm glad you asked that. First of all, the B3 part, I'm trying to get people to understand that really just means a cabinet, the B.
There's several.
It's the Hammond tone wheel organ is the significance of the popularity of the Hammond organ sound. They started making them in 1934 and essentially made them the same way until 1975. In 1955, they introduced the three series organs. So there was a B3 and a C3. And what was different about those than the ones previous to that is that it had a percussion feature. And that sound is what made it such a very great sound for that fast attack, you know, for jazz, for blues, for rock. I mean, it became the staple sound for all genres of music.
So when you say that percussion feature,
when I say percussion, it's like a marimba or a xylophone, that way when you hit it and it fades away, that added to the regular sound. So you'd get a boom to the initial when you first push a key down.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hammond organ already has a very fast attack. You know, it was originally invented as an affordable, cost-effective means for churches to have organs in them because pipe organs were so expensive. But pipe organs are very soft, like that, but the Hammond's pow, and there's a little click on each note as well. But the B3, and that everybody went crazy for that percussion sound. So there's actually several models that are the identical electronics, but the B3 is what gets the big name, I guess, because that's what was used in the professional field where if people saw you on a stage, it's a four-leg open.
It's very recognizable.
Yes, a C3 is a church-style cabinet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there was an A100, which is for the home, which had speakers built in it. But it was the same mechanics.
The same mechanics. So when you look at the main organ, you can play it just like a regular organ. So what adds that? There's the percussive sound that you're talking about, but the speaker, I guess, has the tone wheel in it that you're mentioning.
Yeah. No, no, the tone wheel is that's different. Those are little wheels that actually spin with a magnet. That's what makes the organ sound.
Okay.
You're talking about the Leslie speaker. that goes, the rotating speakers. That's and those came after the Hammond organ. A gentleman named Don Leslie. He invented the Leslie speaker.
Okay, so that's not actually a necessary part of something that's a B3.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's necessary.
Okay. Right. It became necessary.
Yes, it
after
did.
That.
Yes. Okay. Those two, that actually is what really made the organ sing, is when mm-hmm. you added a Leslie speaker to the sound. And what that does is, it was so you could have, you know, how pipes are all different parts of the church or auditorium or a concert hall, and the sound travels around. So that was the original idea of Leslie speaker.
Okay. I know we bring tours through the station, and we always show the kids the Leslie, and we turn it around, and mm-hmm. they're fascinated. It's like magic back there.
I know.
It looks like an alien robot to them with those little glass tubes and mm-hmm. the spinning cones in there.
Yeah.
And but on the other hand, there's kind of a simplicity to it.
Very much.
It's so simple what makes that amazing sound.
Yeah. Basically, the speaker – a lot of people think the speakers themselves are turned, and the speaker is stationary. It just shoots the sound through a horn. And then that's the high part, and the low part shoots the low tones, the bass, through a rotating drum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get this beautiful sound.
That gorgeous sound. And so tell us, people often say, oh, you have a full Leslie. What is there a difference between a partial and a full Leslie? Or?
No, not really.
Okay.
What you have there is the very first, it's called a 31H. Those are the very early Leslie speakers that were made in the 40s. And maybe they mean full size,
full,
you know,
because
there's
right.
the full Leslie, there's a smaller Leslie, but it has pretty much the same components. They call that a low boy. That's called a high boy.
Okay.
And then there's the standard size. So.
So it makes the same sound, though, has the same quality.
Yeah, this particular
sound.
One, though, has, to me, those are the best sounding ones. When everything is properly, they have a big bass chamber mm-hmm. and it's just mm-hmm. a huge sound.
Well, maybe you can spin it a bit after our interview
yeah,
and just
why not?
Test it out.
Yeah.
How many Hammond organs do you have?
Now I don't have as many. I used to have, at one time I had probably 35 of them. So now it's down to about a half a dozen.
So George, you have a really big house then, I guess.
Pretty good size.
Yeah, Hammond in every room. Hammond in every
room. They did. Awesome. At one time, a few in every room.
Yeah. Wow. And did you have like your own personal Hammond mechanic, or did you service
no,
them yourself?
No, I do it all myself. I taught myself at a very young age because I remember the first time there was a problem when I was about, I think around 10 years old, and the guy came over to fix it, and he was there for about 10 minutes, and it was $100. So I said, I'm going to have to learn how to do this stuff.
I could earn $100 at the age of 10. So what kind of music did you start playing on the Hammond? You said it was all around you. Your father played. It was in the area. You were very young when you remember hearing it. But when you actually started playing, what style of music did you play on the Hammond?
Right away, it was jazz, mm-hmm. blues, jazz influence. There's a particular song that I first learned, was a Jimmy Smith song called The Sermon. That's the first thing I learned. I learned the whole solo, note for note. And that just came from – that's, and then it went on from there, you know. But we had a lot of great – I mean, most – all our music in the house, our record collection was jazz or, you know, good R&B like Fats Domino and Little Richard and Ray Charles. And so that was all huge influence on me too.
Mm-hmm.
Still is.
So did you, like, put the records on and kind of wail away on the Hammond to those? Or did you start a band early?
No, I didn't start. I played with the records. Mm-hmm. And then when I was about 6 years old is when my dad finally thought I was ready. I can go sit in with the band.
At six?
Mm-hmm.
At six. So how old were you when you learned that first song?
Four. I learned that really fast.
Yeah.
I learned it maybe a month or two after I started.
And I mean, I should mention this because he won't, but I mean, this is a Jimmy Smith tune, which is like, this is pretty fancy stuff. So learning that solo note for note at that age is unbelievable.
Just to think of a four-year-old at a Hammond making it work
is pretty crazy, right?
Amazing.
Well, I think that, you know, being so young and I loved it so much and I had a natural ability somehow with it, you know, and no distractions.
Mm-hmm. That's right. At that age, what distracts you?
That was my – I was like a kid playing with his favorite toy. So, yeah. You know, I don't know. The whole genius factor, I don't know. I just think it was part of, you know.
Does your family have like a home movie of you playing that first piece?
No, they don't. I don't have anything that early. They do have videos of me when I was 9 and 10 years old, but nothing that early.
Not the 4-year-old stage. Yeah. That would be lovely. So 6 years old, your dad thought you were ready to sit in with the band.
Yeah, I knew about 5 or 6 tunes all the way through. And I knew blues and rhythm changes. So with that, you could play all night, you know. So that was the first time. And I'll never forget that. That was like yesterday walking into the – I remember my mom – get me all ready, my little blue suit. And the club that my dad was working in was just almost walking distance from the house. So we went there and we went inside. And I remember hearing that live music in the club the first time. And it was unbelievable.
It affected your 6-year-old soul.
It really did. It did. It did. The sound was like, it was completely different than what I was hearing at home, you know.
On your records.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and even if I play the organ at home, it just had this, there was this whole other quality to the live, you know, the saxophone, the drums. Those were the first time I heard instruments like that live, so. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the set, which songs you played?
Yeah, I played The Sermon. I played Misty. And I had one more tune I played, and I played. This is funny because I was also a big Elvis fan, so I was singing and playing too. And I remember I did Hound Dog too.
So you were singing at the age of 6 while you were playing the
Hound.
Oh, this is great.
Where was YouTube when Joey DeFrancesco started? What an amazing scene you're painting there. And was the place full? Do you remember that, if there were a lot of people in the club?
Oh, yeah, it was packed. You know, everybody was full of smoke, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those were the days.
Club.
Yeah.
Right.
And I remember the guy that owned the club, his name was Sal. He gave me a $10 bill at the end of the night. I thought I was
rich. You made it.
Oh, you know how much bubble gum I could buy with that? That's right. I went straight to the little candy store, you know?
Just don't stick it underneath the seat of the hammer.
Right.
If you are tuning in, my guest is Joey DeFrancesco. He will be playing tonight at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. Gerd Vustem is with us as well. Gerd, now you're saying there's a full house. Does that mean there are no tickets left?
We have I think we have one or two spots at tables left downstairs because we had some tickets come back from sponsors that couldn't make tonight. And we have the mezzanine regular seating available also. We have some student seats in there. I want to encourage everybody to come check this out because this is, you know, we booked this show for a number of different reasons, and I'll tell you in a second. Some of them, but mainly because I think this is an evening that you don't want to miss. It's unforgettable, I guarantee it to you. You need to see Joey in action. It's going to be just a phenomenal
thing. Well, after those stories, I think people are going to be rushing to get those tickets. After that moment, that 6-year-old moment, what happened after that? Did you continue playing with your dad's band?
At that point, I still was. I mean, I was such a young kid, and I was happy to do that. I used to drive my mom crazy because I tell Danny to take me tonight. Because he didn't, you know, it was also a club and smoke and things going on. Probably I didn't see any of that.
Yeah, you
know?
Just saw the ham and the music.
But so he was sometimes a little reluctant. He didn't want me to go all the time just because he was being a good dad.
Right.
So I would bug my mom. In the summer months, you know, I guess when I was 6, I was in first grade. So summer months, I'd drive him. Yeah, can I? So then he got a steady gig where he would play at these Italian restaurants. You know, they'd have jazz in there, though. You know, I mean, as a featured, people would listen to the music, too. It was great. Nobody was saying, turn it down, nothing like that. It was great stuff. So then it was a little better because it was a restaurant atmosphere and, you know, and then – but they would play from like 9 to 1 or 9 to 2 a lot of times. So if I would go with him – my mom usually would go so that I go play first set and then they'd take me home. And sometimes I would go with him. And so they lined up 4 or 5 chairs in the back so I could lay down and go to sleep. No.
That's the Philadelphia version of the Fade Dodo.
That's right. That's great.
Yeah, I was in heaven, you know. And so that's what I did for a while. And then when I was around 10 years old, I started going to this music school in Philadelphia called the Settlement Music School. And they had a youth jazz ensemble. I was the youngest one. I mean, other than me, there was 15, 16, 17-year-old kids like that. And then from that, and it was downtown in Philly, and we started playing some small outdoor concerts and different things like that. I started meeting a lot of these other players and music, you know, some of the legendary musicians I got to play with back then. And that's when it really started. And then,
who were some of these musicians that you met and got to play with?
Philly Joe Jones, one of the great jazz drummers, played with Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. And there was a saxophone player named Hank Mobley, who also was with Miles and had very prolific in his own right. And there was Shirley Scott was there, you know, Don Patterson, Charles Erlin.
All names that anyone who knows a little bit about jazz would recognize.
Sure, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you met those people just from playing around Philadelphia and with your fellow schoolmates.
Yeah, and then the names, you know, people started to hear about me a little bit, mm-hmm, and that's how things got rolling.
Yeah. Well, when you started creating your own trio, your own group, how would you characterize your style? I mean, you've talked about being influenced by jazz and blues, and mm-hmm. Did you develop something that was very particular to you, a style?
Yeah, I do, because I kind of, all the different things that I like, even at an early age, I took all the influences and played, I played a big, wide variety of things. Mm-hmm. I still do. But, you know, you take everything that you love, kind of put it in a funnel, you know, and whatever comes out at the bottom winds up being you. Even if you're trying to, because the only way you could learn how to play is by listening to the records and recordings of people that you love and copying them. There's mm-hmm. no way around that, because that's how you learn how to speak
right.
when you're a kid. You're right. mimicking your parents, the people around you. It's the same thing. It's a vocabulary. And eventually you start sounding like yourself, and there's no way for you really to play exactly like somebody else. I mean, mm-hmm. you just can't, because you're a different spirit, different soul. Mm-hmm. It's going to sound different. Mm-hmm. So as heavily influenced as I was, I started to find my own little way of, you know, improvising. And that's the beauty of jazz, because you're improvising. If you're not doing that anyway, you're not playing jazz. The music authentically, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's I had little bands and things. And when I went into high school, it was a performing arts high school, and there was one of the students was Christian McBride, who's a very prevalent mm-hmm. bassist in today's jazz world. And he was there, and then, you know, the singing group that was quite famous a few years ago called Boys to Men, they were all attending there. Mm-hmm. And the drummer Questlove, he was going there. We were all there together.
Wow. I think people are beginning to realize just how rich that musical gumbo, we would call it, is in Philadelphia.
So all these guys were there, you know. So we were jamming. Kurt Rosenwinkel was there, guitar player.
Incredible.
So we had a great time. Mm-hmm. And that's how that was, you know.
Wow. And do you tour steadily now with this trio, or do you have other groups, or is the trio the main?
This is my main trio. Okay. I've always had maybe different, you know, as a musician, you always have different ideas, mm-hmm. different mm-hmm. situations. You want to try this, try that. But this is the staple of the nucleus of what I do now.
Can you tell us about the other musicians in the trio?
Sure. Guitar player Jeff Parker, who's originally from Virginia, Hampton, Virginia. I met him quite a few years ago in Chicago. And he's played with a bunch of different situations. And he's just very authentic to the music. He's a great player. And on drums, also from Chicago, George Flutis, who's also played with everybody. And it's a really great band. This is a new band. This band's been together now for just a few months.
Six months, okay.
Or something like that. The band, I had one band for 20-something years. So I figured I better try something different here. You know, we all need to
get into musical ruts, I guess.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. If people are just tuning in, my guest is jazz organist Joe DeFrancesco. He'll be at the Acadiana Center for the Arts tonight. There's still a handful of tickets left in the mezzanine and a couple other places. You can call the box office now or go online to get those tickets. Joey, you'll also be in Lake Charles, and we have many listeners in Lake Charles. You'll be at McNeese State University for the Jazz Fest. The State Jazz Fest is there, and you'll be performing on Saturday, May 3rd. And if anyone's interested in that, you can contact McNeese, Patrick Shang, about this festival. And you can also go to the Banners website and find out more about it. So that'll be on Saturday, May 3rd in Lake Charles. People have the opportunity to see Joey there. But tonight in Lafayette, if you're able to get here tonight, there are still a few tickets left for Joey's performance. So how's it working out with these new musicians? I know they're listening right now, probably.
No, it's great. I love them. I'm having a ball. And you know, we're still very in the exploring stages, so a lot of great stuff is happening all the time. It's very spontaneous, you know.
Yeah. You find you're playing a slightly different kind of music or just a different sort of language?
Yeah, everything's slight differences. I mean, you know, we all love the same types of things, and so, you know, it's nice. I really enjoy it, and I think that everybody that comes out tonight will too.
And, you know, we should probably mention, because, you know, Joey's trio, if you're listening to this, you know, it's an organ, a keyboard player, a guitarist, and a drummer. You're thinking there's something missing. Of course, this is the classic Hammond trio setup a la Jimmy Smith, because a Hammond player like Joey, they play their own bass line, right? Joey's going to work his feet, so there's actually foot pedals in this organ, and that's where the bass comes from, right? So this is very straight-up classic jazz 101. And and really, it's something to see and to hear. It's just going to be amazing.
Well, and what a treat for us. We have not seen that kind of a trio around here, or really, you know, there are a few people who do play the Hammond, but not like you do.
You know, and as a matter of fact, when a year and a half ago, when I was looking at putting the season together, I wanted to have a show for the very end of April or this date, May 1st, because we started the month of April, which is Jazz Appreciation Month, with San Francisco Jazz Collective, which is a great show. And we wanted to frame it with another jazz show. When this opportunity came up, I said, oh, man, this would be awesome. I love this guy. You know, I used to be a big Jimmy Smith fan because George Benson was in the band, and George was my guitar god. And so I thought, you know, so that's actually how I came to love and appreciate Hammond and jazz. And then I thought, I better check with some people. So I called Eric Atcock, our local, you know, Hammond guru, and I said, you know, I'm thinking about bringing Joey D here, and you think we can, like, people, like, come to this and recognize it? And Eric went nuts because he said, nuts. I mean, this is like the man. And so so after that, I felt that we absolutely have to have him here. And so we're really thrilled. It's going to be a very spectacular show.
Well, Eric Adcock vetted you. That's good.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank
Eric,
you.
If you're listening, we got you special seats. You can see the hands and feet at work.
That's what I was going to ask. I hope Eric Adcock can go. And maybe Buckwheat Zydeco.
As a matter of fact, we invited Stan for the show tonight. Okay. And as a matter of fact, we're talking about Buckwheat in the car because you know of him and his music, and hopefully he'll be there tonight as well.
So maybe in the future you can incorporate a little bit of Zydeco Hammond, you know. And
I love that music. So,
well, it sounds like it's going to be a fabulous concert tonight. There are a few tickets left, but I can imagine some people calling up right now.
That's right.
So get on the telephone, call
us now,
or online.
233-7060. Just call in, see what's still available. And even if you walk up tonight, we have the mezzanine that we're opening up really just the day of the show as a bit of overflow seating, because as you know, we do the club style seating for the jazz shows downstairs, so you'll probably be able to get in some way or another, and you don't want to miss the show.
No, sounds like a beautiful show. Again, if you are tuning in, my guest Gerd Wüstemann, who's director of the Acadiana Center for the Arts, and jazz organist Joey DeFrancesco, who will be with his trio tonight at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. Glad you could be here, and hope you're getting a chance to enjoy a bit of the culture while you're here.
Yes, definitely. Thank you
both.
Thanks, Phil.